watch cartoons. We'll take a look back at where we've been. So let's hop into our time machine.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Cartoon Time Machine. I'm Scarlett, and today I'm joined by our producer, Rachel. Welcome back to the show, honorary animate, Rachel.
Of course, thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to jump into the time machine.
It's a holiday week, and Katie's feeling a little under the weather, so really appreciate you stepping in for this episode, especially because I'm really excited about this week's episode. Rachel, you and I were lucky enough to catch a pre-screening a few weeks back of Guillermo del Toro's new stop-motion film, Pinocchio, and both of us enjoyed it a lot, as we expected to. It was obviously combining a lot of things I know both of us really like: Guillermo del Toro, stop motion, whimsical animation. So I was so glad that we got to see it. The movie is not going to premiere until December on Netflix. So we're going to keep this conversation regarding the film very spoiler free, very general. The only spoiler I'll give is that we really liked it. And we definitely recommend that everyone sees it, probably on as big a screen as you can to catch the detail, but Netflix is good too.
it was stunning. Like, every part of it, especially coming off the he who shall not be named version of Pinocchio a couple weeks prior.
Yeah, I feel like this is gonna partially become us comparing this to the Zemeckis movie, which came out like a month before we saw this version.
Oh my god.
And another spoiler alert, this one is better. This one is better than the one Disney made.
If you've been paying a single lick of attention, yeah, that should not come as a spoiler at all. But no, so one of the things that really caught me was part of our screening was Del Toro actually also did a Q&A, and he came out before the movie started and kind of gave a little preamble to it. And one of the things he talked about was that in this movie, we talked about things that hurt. Mm. Like, they had the courage to dive into emotion and actually let emotion really drive the story in a lot of ways, rather than like Pinocchio just being this kind of annoying bratty kid. He was a kid that carried a lot of weight in the story, and you could really see in every ounce of their storytelling the hurt that carried through everything. And it's not so there are certain movies I haven't watched yet, because I say it's kind of hard to willingly ruin your own day. Yes. A la Schindler's List. Yep. Like, it's hard to flip on a movie that you know is just going to be a 200-minute downer. This, I don't think, is a 200-minute downer.
No.
It's got a lot of life, and it's got a lot of joy, and you can see the love that went into it. It just also dares to look at the other side of the coin.
I think what I like about this movie is I feel like this is a movie that has something to say. Someone went into this movie and said, this is the best way to explain the ideas that I want to share with the audience. I think we see a lot of movies that kind of go like in the opposite way. They just like start with, you know, oh, like, this is a fun premise, and we'll like work out what it means later. Like, for example, the Zemeckis Pinocchio. I have no idea what the thesis idea of that movie was, other than Disney wants to make money and they already have this property. Like, I don't think that movie had anything relevant to say.
No.
This movie has strong themes of existentialism, themes of religion, themes of identity, what it means to be human and grow and change, which I think are all things that fit very naturally into the Pinocchio story. I also don't think this has the opposite problem of like trying to fit, you know, a theme into something that won't fit it. I think Pinocchio naturally, you know, the movie follows the, you know, traditional story of Pinocchio that we all know and love in a broad sense of a wood carver makes a wooden boy that comes to life, and the boy has to learn what it means to become real. And that's, you know, where it starts, and it goes in a lot of directions that, you know, I think previous adaptations being a lot more young child oriented. Not to say that you can't show this to kids. I think
Oh, absolutely.
I think many kids will enjoy this. I think it'll be one of those movies that, you know, we love to reflect on and realize in later years, oh, that thing I saw as a kid actually is a lot deeper than I originally thought. But
I suppose in some ways is the difference between like Cocomelon, which is just like bright shiny pictures for kids on screen, versus something that, again, you will look back later and go like, wow, that actually carried a lot. Like that actually, it's the, I'm gonna compare the Disney version of Pinocchio to being Cocomelon, where this one takes that and I don't know, gives the Cocomelon family traumatic backstory.
And I think kids realize, I think kids are smarter than we realize in different ways. I don't think kids need to understand everything to know the difference between shiny candy junk food and a full meal. This movie is a full meal for children. They can go as deep as they want. They can finish the whole plate if they so choose, but maybe they're not ready for that. But I think they still see that there is depth here that most films do not believe they are smart enough to comprehend. And I love that about this movie. I think Del Toro, I think he mentioned, you know, that this was, you know, a film he made for the whole family, but a film he made for himself. You know, it's not necessarily about making kids movies for kids, making movies for adults, making movies for, you know, everyone you want to. I think it clearly started as a passion project that just by virtue of being so good, I think is fully accessible to any audience.
Yeah, no, you can tell walking in that this was everything he wanted to say. And Del Toro is a filmmaker that just breathes heart in everything he does. Like, you can see in every move that he makes, he just really loves filmmaking. And he loves movies. And this is, him making this stuff is absolutely living out a dream for him. Like, you can see it when he's on stage. You can even see it just looking in the filmmaking. Everything is just drop dead gorgeous. And this movie absolutely is, I think it's about 2 hours long, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It is 2 hours of just everyone giving their all. Every animator giving their all. And I mean, I'm very much of the opinion that you should give your artists freedom to believe in what they're doing and to do what they want to do rather than just like churning something out. Like I was in theater growing up. I did improv growing up. Sometimes your actors and your like performers know what's best. And so in this case, you can tell that like he was there as a guiding force leading them forward, but you can see through the stop motion animation how much love went into those characters and how much those animators also were part of the process. This wasn't just churned out to make money or to, because honestly, with stop motion, you can't really just churn it out to make money. Like that's a prohibitive factor to begin with. But to me, this felt like it took stop motion and pushed it even a step further.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is the most impressive stop motion film I've ever seen. And I say that coming off of a podcast where Katie and I raved about Henry Selick. And not to say that Henry Selick is not still a master of his craft, which of course he is. But I sort of, even going into this, as soon as I heard that Guillermo del Toro was doing a stop motion Pinocchio, like, immediately that was like, yes, that sounds right. Like sometimes you hear a combination of things and you're just like, yes, that makes sense. Like it almost feels as if you already knew it was happening before someone told you about it because it's so perfect. I mean, Guillermo del Toro is a director who has become known for his detailed production design, for his creativity, for his, you know, willingness to push the envelope. And again, yeah, that detail orientedness, which you need for stop motion. You cannot, if you're going into making a stop motion film, you are accepting the fact that every last frame needs to look perfect. There is no room for error. There's very little room to rewrite your script, rewrite your story. You got to be very confident what you have from the beginning because retakes are going to be almost impossible. You really got to make sure when you start filming the scene, you know exactly where it's going because you will have to start over from the start if you decide later on that you don't like it. And there's a deliberate quality to both stop motion and I think all of Del Toro's works. I mean, there's no slapdash Del Toro film. When he makes a film, everything you see on screen is intentional. And that really is allowed to shine here. I mean, you were talking about the, you know, the animators. I know Del Toro mentioned in his the Q&A he did about how stop motion animation and animation in general is interesting because your animators are essentially your actors. So he mm-hmm. got to talk to these, you know, the modelers, the animators, and dictate exactly the performance that he wants from, you know, these puppets. And I think he got them. I mean, Geppetto's facial expressions.
Stunning, absolutely stunning.
The micro expressions on this puppet, even when he's not speaking, you can see everything going through his brain. And as a result, you're fully immersed in the experience. There was not a moment watching this where I was like, oh yeah, that's a puppet. They're moving it on a crane. Because you can't, because it is so detailed, and there is so much thought put into what is this character feeling in this moment, and how do we show that to the audience? It's really incredible stuff.
And along that point, I think it speaks so much more to like him as a director, because when you work with actors, you're working with a living being. Like, you're working with someone who has thoughts and knows how to emote and like works, is supposed to work in tandem with you versus right. like working directly under your control. In this case, of course, you had the animators who like were, again, worked similarly to your actors, but in this case, every micro expression had to be imagined. Mm-hmm. You had to, I know I don't have the foresight for stuff like that. Like, I couldn't go through and imagine how every beat in a scene should play out in my head. Mm-hmm. And in this case, of course, you have some of the stop motion greats like Henry Selick, and you have like the team at Leica, and you have people who are incredibly good at stop motion. And like, of course, hats off to them. But like, this to me felt like it took it to an even further level. Like, it took every part of imagination and like imaginative storytelling and emotional beats, and it took stop motion, brought it to a completely new emotional level, because you had the foresight to go like, this is how Geppetto is going to react to this thing happening, or this is how we're going to portray Pinocchio. It requires so much more direction than normal acting does. Normal acting, you can go like, yeah, one take, you did that well, let's move on. Versus this is just so much more care.
Yeah, I really do think that once this movie premieres and it gets to screen for a wider audience, obviously, you know, certain critics have seen it, people in the industry have seen it. But I think once this is released to the general public, I do think this is going to be considered a new baseline for the greatest stop motion movies. Like you know, I think we can argue back and forth about, you know, whether or not it's a better overall movie than other stop motion movies. But I think in terms of the craft, in terms of the technology and the care and the artistry, it really blew my mind, the attention to detail here and how utterly gorgeous this movie is. The smoothness of these characters and their movements. I mean, there is life to them in a way that I was not expecting to see life in stop motion. A lot of the times for me, the appeal of stop motion is sort of that rougher aspect. And it was, you know, there were still, you know, the occasional, you know, missing frames and the like, and the texturedness that you only get from stop motion. That is,
which honestly, I'm fine with.
Like, no, I think it's a feature. It's a feature, not a bug. 100%. Yeah. I wouldn't want it to look smooth as CG, because then I could just have CG. But something about the movement of these characters, you know, even ones like Pinocchio, who are, you know, wooden and therefore are sort of designed to be artificial, there's so much life to these characters in a way that, like, when you're watching Coraline, when you're watching Nightmare, part of the appeal, at least for me, is that constant sense of, yeah, that's a clay puppet. Like, that's kind of fun. Like, that's a fun aspect. And again, feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
But when you see this movie, you guys, you are in this movie. There are moments when I'm like, wow, that Geppetto guy is a really good actor. Wait.
Oh no.
Right. Made out of artificial materials. Right.
Like, Jack Skellington looks ridiculous, but he's supposed to look ridiculous.
In the best possible way. Yeah, I'm not out. Again, we just did a whole Henry Selick retrospective. I am not out here knocking Nightmare. I'm not out here knocking Coraline. I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I did.
No, hell no.
Movies, different. I think that's kind of the key, is that this is almost a different breed of stop motion. I feel almost as if I'm watching, like, I was kind of too young to have, like, appreciated, like, you know, too young slash not born for Toy Story. But it does feel a little bit like going from, having seen Toy Story and then, like, 5 years later going in and seeing Monsters, Inc. and just seeing the change in the texture. Like, the technology is arguably the same, but I feel like we've just, like, jumped into a leap that I was not necessarily expecting to see. If Katie were here, I'm sure they'd talk about Czech puppetry and how it's probably a lot more similar to this. I don't think they've seen it yet, but when they do, I'm looking forward to their thoughts, because I think this probably has more in common with foreign stop motion than what we're used to as Americans. Again, not surprising with Guillermo del Toro not being an American director. Although he might have citizenship. I don't know. Probably.
I think he has citizenship. I mean, it doesn't matter.
I don't know the personal details of Guillermo del Toro's life, and it is not relevant.
No. I wouldn't be certain. Part of this to me screamed like Eastern European, like part of the look of it looked, which is, I mean, it was set in Italy, so that still checks out.
checks.
no, like, it, I suppose we can maybe, instead of, like, just continually harping on animation here, we can maybe talk a little bit about, like, spoiler-free story elements.
Yeah,
we'll give the
vague description, again, mostly to set it apart from the Zemeckis one, which is the familiar story, but told thoroughly without teeth or heart.
Yeah. No, this one walks in from the beginning with teeth. Like, you first scene, you are seeing the, like, emotional core of the story. And it's pretty dark. Like, it's not, in the Zemeckis version, I don't think you ever actually established that, like, Geppetto's son is dead.
You do. You see a picture of him and he looks sad, but he's Tom Hanks. So, like, it's like a warm blanket. Right. Like, I can't feel sad around Tom Hanks, because, like, even if he's sad, I'm like, you're okay. You make me feel happy. You're not, Tom Hanks is never going to make me feel sad.
No, like, Tom Hanks is a Hollywood protector, and watch, one day I'm going to regret those words. But if I ever do, I'm going to be so sad.
I think we all agree that if Tom Hanks, like, has some, like, skeletons in his closet, we're all just, like, kind of giving up on life, because
I'm done with Hollywood, I give up, we're done.
I don't know how to move forward if I find out that Tom Hanks isn't a nice guy, okay? Like, I don't know how to live.
No, if Tom Hanks turns out to be, like, a problematic figure, I will give up on Hollywood. I'm just absolutely done. I will never watch a movie again. I cannot.
Right. But yeah, no, there's a melancholy to a lot. I think that's the best word for it. I think there is through a lot of this movie, like I said, there's, you know, themes of life, death, existentialism. You know, you go into this movie and you start off in, you know, a very sad place with a man mourning his son. And it, you know, you kind of expect that of a Pinocchio story. You know, because either you have the woodcarver who has lost a child, or a woodcarver who desperately wants one but has never had one. So you sort of expect Pinocchio to start in a sad place. But I think there's a really just pervasive downbeat to this whole movie that just works so wonderfully well for it.
And I think part of it, the pervasive downbeat, I think also, like, helps forward Geppetto's story, because you actually see him evolving. You don't just he doesn't just all of a sudden one day accept this kid as being his son.
No, he doesn't.
Like, it takes time. It takes a minute for him to clear the space in his heart and realize, like, hey, this may not be my son, but that's okay.
Right.
Like, there's something about this that still offers him peace, even if it's not a piece he necessarily would have sought out originally.
Right.
And that really forwards the story, is this, like, the weight of the loss moves everything forward without, again, ruining my day.
Yeah, no, I think I left this movie again, certainly with a slight feeling of melancholy, but you know, I was sobbing by the end. I was a mess. You probably weren't because you don't really cry at movies, but I died crying. But I think there's a difference between a movie that just makes you feel sad and nothing else. Like, there's a lot of movies that are just sad. Like, again, you mentioned Schindler's List before. You leave Schindler's List and there's like a little bit of feeling of hope, but mostly you're just like, wow, I am really sad right now.
The one I would go back to is Hotel Rwanda.
Like, I haven't seen that.
Oh, I watched it in high school and I'm like, hey, cool. I have zero desire to ever watch that again. Absolutely. Right. Like, goose egg, nothing. Granted, I'm not going to tell you it's a badly made movie, but I have absolutely zero desire to go through and watch another film about genocide.
Yeah, no, exactly. This movie, I don't think does that. I don't think this movie is relishing in its sadness. I think it is trying to be, I think, very blunt about the human experience and about, again, life, death, the soul. In many ways, I think there is a strong argument throughout this movie that, like, we build our souls ourselves, that we are not necessarily born with them, that we grow into them, which I was not expecting the movie to, like, make me, like, think so hard about what I am, but that was cool. But yeah, I mean, I think about something like, you know, even the 1940s Disney movie, which I do love, and I know no Zemeckis remake is going to make me stop loving that one. But I think that it is in many ways a much more simple story, yeah, as you would expect from that era. But yeah, you know, Geppetto, you know, prays to the stars to give him a son. He has one, and he basically immediately shoves him out the door to go to school. And he accepts him immediately. This Geppetto has to learn to love. And I like that Geppetto has an arc in this one. I think in many ways he has the deeper arc than Pinocchio himself. And I wasn't necessarily expecting that, but I was really happy to see that. I think you have the potential for a really profound character. That again, the Zemeckis movie, you cast Tom Hanks. That's all we need to know. Like, again, it's Tom Hanks as Geppetto, I feel like, has very much the same energy as, like, Guillermo del Toro doing stop motion. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, kindly old woodcarver, Tom Hanks, boom. You don't they clearly didn't think they needed to go deeper than that, so they didn't.
And he's dancing and singing, he's having a good time, and he makes his little, like, cuckoo clocks, and he's living this merry old life with his dead son. And this one, again, as we've said, you see it in Geppetto that he has had a loss. Yeah. And that, I think there's a beauty to that too. Again, as Del Toro said, looking at things that hurt. And it's also, I think there are certain times when stories just kind of go melodramatic for no real purpose. And I won't tell you this is melodrama. I'll tell you that this is telling a story that hurts, but doing so in a way that's very respectful, and doing so in a way that, like, to my knowledge, Del Toro's never lost a child. I don't know. But watching this film, I would imagine it was made by a parent who had lost a child. Like, I believe that the emotion is that realistic and that palpable and that carefully made. For, like, for example, Onward, the director of Onward, Dan Scanlon, lost his dad when he was young.
Right.
So that film is about him telling a story that, you know, matters to him. I would imagine this story was told by someone who had lost a child. I believe it is that realistic and that carefully made.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme in his films, in, you know, to be talking about, you know, childhood, a loss of innocence. I mean, I think honestly a lot of this movie gave me big Pan's Labyrinth vibes.
I still haven't seen it.
Okay, well, I won't go into a detail.
That's fine.
But I think a lot of it is the color scheme. Pan's Labyrinth for being a creepy movie, in a lot of ways, in the fantasy world, has a really warm color scheme and a lot of wood. So I think, like, the wood grain that we see, obviously, in a lot of things in the movie, because Geppetto's a woodcarver and obviously Pinocchio is made out of wood, It reminds me of that. They switched to a lovely warm color scheme in places like Geppetto's workshop, and in moments when Geppetto is with Pinocchio. There's a great scene where they're walking home against a setting sun that was just like, oh my god, this is
it was gorgeous.
Amazing. Oh wow. You know, again, also giving me vibes of Jack Skellington, you know, discovering the doors in Nightmare. But yeah, so I think Guillermo del Toro strikes me as a man who is probably very protective of the idea of childhood. I don't know if, you know, I don't know too much about his past. I know, again, he is also very strongly against, you know, authoritarianism, which, again, we see really strongly in Pan's Labyrinth, and we see really strongly
here.
Because of the time period that it's set in Italian history. Very strong vibes.
Which is not something I was expecting. With Pinocchio and with the Disney films, I'd always sort of imagined that like Pinocchio was just set in some distant past land, like 1400s, 1500s, just something that I knew a little about, but it was a fantasy world, so I didn't care. With this one, like, it actually, again, has the gall to set it in something that the current audience knows about, and I think that even furthers the connection. Like, it makes the connection that much stronger because it has, perhaps self-absorbed as this may sound, it connects it to something that you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I think there is a real attempt to ground this movie. It's a very magical realism film, which I love. Again, very
Pan's Labyrinth. It's very Del Toro.
I wasn't necessarily going into this thinking this movie is Pan's Labyrinth, but and it's not. He didn't like remake Pan's Labyrinth with this movie, but there's the themes I think are very similar. And I think the idea of like what's the real world and what we should make the real world into, I think are definitely themes that happen here. You know, there's a reading of Pan's Labyrinth where like the fantasy world is, you know, really death, really heaven, and this movie has scenes that take place in an afterlife. You know, there's a lot.
They're also stunning. The afterlife scenes. I mean, again, the entire movie is stunning, but I think that thought that went into crafting the afterlife world and like the blue fairy and all of like the really magical elements of this movie, the blue fairy was stunning.
Again, thought that went into this. We won't go into too many details. I think I want you guys to go in surprised by what the blue fairy looks like, because I was sure surprised by what the blue fairy looks like.
It was beautiful, and again,
surprised also by that link. You know, the blue fairy, I think, is usually, you know, an uncomplicated figure of life. The blue fairy in the traditional story comes in and turns this, you know, either dead or unalive creature into a live one. But I think that, you know, this movie ties it more closely to our life and death really so different. And what does it mean to be alive versus being dead? And I think that's obvious. You know, again, I don't think that those themes were, you know, forced into this movie. I think Pinocchio is, as a concept, is a story about what it means to be alive. And then if you're discussing what it means to be alive, you sort of have to reflect on what it means to be dead. So I think everything flows very naturally. This was a very non-traditional story. It's a very non-traditional telling of Pinocchio. But it feels right. It feels,
yeah.
I read the book when I was like 10, so I don't remember much about it. I remember it was a lot darker than the Disney movie, and the Disney movie was already pretty dark.
Considering Pinocchio gets hanged at one point.
He does get hanged, yeah. The fox and the cat hang him. And then he basically, the next chapter, realizes, hey, wait a minute, I can't die, and then just walks away. But he kills Jiminy Cricket in like the first like chunk of time. So it's like the first, you know, like 5 pages of the book. There's a lot of violence to the poor cricket. As the cricket is called Sebastian in this movie, right?
Yeah, I think it's Sebastian J. Cricket. Oh, we also have to take a second to appreciate Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor appreciation for life.
Yeah. Well, like he doesn't do voice acting like super frequently. The only one I could think of off the top of my head is Beauty and the Beast, which admittedly I don't think he
has done some, but I also can't.
I'm a big fan of looking at movies as a sum of their parts. I don't believe that he's the problem with Beauty and the Beast, but we're going to leave that discussion for another day.
He is in fact a bright spot in that movie, 100%.
Him and Luke Evans are the two bright spots in that movie.
Yes.
But he, I Jiminy Cricket, I think, in this, or Sebastian J. Cricket, my apologies, in this movie, I believe, had a lot of life to him. And I could, he, so as we've talked about, Geppetto is the kind of emotional core of this movie, but the way that, like, Sebastian Cricket, I'm gonna keep calling him Jiminy, I can't do this.
I know, me too. I honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the reason he's Sebastian here is because he's Sebastian in the book, but again, it's been, you know, a decade since I read the book, and my brain is so inclined to call him Jiminy Cricket no matter what, because...
Yeah. Either that, or there's a world where, like, Jiminy Cricket was copyrighted.
Oh, I think that's very likely. Yeah. I think my guess is that is the reason, because I think they would have just gone with it because that's what's well known. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's a Disney creation. The name just sounds Disney. Like the name has like a Mickey Mouse quality to it that I'm like, yeah, that I would not be surprised to learn that came up just in the Disney movie.
Where, like, you can't just copyright the name Geppetto, because Geppetto doesn't have a last name, I believe. So you can't just copyright Geppetto, and then Pinocchio would have been held under the Carlotti IP. So
yeah, I just looked it up. It is it was just called the Cricket in the book Pinocchio. Okay. And it's Jiminy only in the Disney movie. So yes, yeah, so that was the reason.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Del Toro just wanted to separate a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you'd never confuse this for the Disney movie, for which I am very glad. There's very little shared DNA.
Yeah, and even like referring back to the original Disney animated Pinocchio, like, that one's fine in itself, but this one just has a different life to it, and I would rather have the two of them separated. Not because one is bad or the other one's good, but just because they approach the world in such a different way that they don't need to be compared.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think the original, I mean, I'm going to ignore the Zemeckis movie for now. I think the 1940s Pinocchio movie is at its heart a morality story. It is a story about, you know, doing good things and being rewarded for being good, that to live together in a society, we all need to behave in a certain way. We need to not give in to our, you know, impulses to be bad. We all need to be the best versions of ourselves we can be. And we need to learn how to be selfless and truthful. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that being the story. Again, I love the original Pinocchio. The kids turning into donkeys scared the hell out of me as a kid. I was like, mentally traumatized from that for a long time. It's a really great movie, and I don't want to knock on it. This movie, I think, is not very interested in morality. I think it is.
I think morality is an afterthought.
Yeah, I think it goes deeper. Yeah,
like it. The movie still has Pinocchio learning to be real and learning, like, to carry emotional weight that he doesn't. I mean, when he first comes alive, he's got the emotional intelligence of a baby, because yeah, he just appeared into the world, and that's how it's supposed to be. And so he grows.
Sings a great musical number. This movie is a musical, by the way. There are songs in this, which I love.
Was not expecting,
but there are songs. None of them are like When You Wish Upon a Star level of great. And I gotta say, when Pinocchio first starts dancing in his puppet show and doesn't sing "I've Got No Strings," that was the one moment where I was actually jarred, because my sense memory of the original is so strong. But the moment when Pinocchio first comes to life and sings his song about, you know, like, discovering the world for the first time, I was like, yeah, this is a lot of fun. This is the energy of a person who has suddenly become alive.
Yeah. No, like, he's got the emotional intelligence of a baby, because by all stretch of the imagination, he is one. So that, there definitely is a level of learning morality, learning right and wrong, but, like, it's not as simple as just learning right and wrong. It's learning right and wrong in a situation where right and wrong is blurred.
Yeah, because they are living in fascist Italy, and for many of society, the thing that is right is going off to war and slaughtering your enemies. And Pinocchio and Geppetto sort of learn along the way that that is not necessarily what is correct. They learn that, you know, what religion tells them is not necessarily correct, because, of course, Pinocchio is sort of seen as an abomination unto the Lord, because he kind of is. And yeah, this movie is also Del Toro getting out some Catholic trauma, I would say.
Oh yeah, I would think so. I would absolutely think so. And just how like Catholicism doesn't always, although it tries to paint itself as being like a group of very sympathetic people, doesn't really a lot sometimes. So right. Like in this case, the Catholic faith is not offering Geppetto the support that he needs. No. when he's going through this trauma and when he's trying to figure out how to navigate this being that just appeared into his life. Like it's a definitely a grappling of like fantasy versus religion at some point, and like which is offering, how does he find the middle ground?
Exactly. And again, no spoilers really, but I think that this movie portrays Pinocchio's lying in a much more complex way than typical tellings of the story do. You know, again, the 1940s movie, lying is bad, TM. The Zemeckis movie does a weird thing where its point is still lying is bad, but there are still several scenes where lying absolutely helps save the day.
Uh-huh.
So it's confused as heck in the Zemeckis one. This movie, I think, it very much makes the argument that lying and choosing to lie in certain situations is what makes us human and is very much a part of us. And I think takes a not terribly moralistic view of lies and truth, and accepts that sometimes there are situations you are in where things aren't that black and white. And you can't just say this thing is bad, don't do this thing ever.
Yeah, like everything in the movie is looked at in shades of black and white, which I think, again, offers kind of a counter argument to religion in some ways, because in Catholicism, everything's very black and white. Like, it's very, you either sinned or you didn't. These are the sins. If you commit them, then you're going to hell. Repent for your sins. It's a very, like dichotomy. It's a very, that's not the way of putting it. There's a lot of dichotomy, like, yeah. They're yes or no. And in this one, it's like, okay, it is about learning and about growing and how learning to tread that line and use it to your benefit versus, like, just going, okay, I'm going to either exist strictly on this side of the line or strictly on that side of the line. Because Pinocchio starts out strictly on the bad side of the line.
Yeah.
But then when he tries to exist strictly on the good side of the line, it doesn't really like yield the results he's looking for. But when he exists in the middle, that's when like he gets the results.
Right, because Pinocchio, when he's born, is sort of pure id, you know, again, in the same way you were saying, you know, he's a baby, he's a small child, he doesn't have a concept of right or wrong or really how the world works. He acts purely based on his instincts. But later in the movie, we see what he is like under fascism. We see what, you know, the sort of automatons that have been created by this war and by this government, and they are less human than Pinocchio. They are sort of forced into this utter lack of freedom. And we see, again, like you said, humanity exists in the center of those two extremes. So do you have any final thoughts you want to wrap us up with? I think we've sort of gone into most, I think we've gone almost as far as we can go without starting to spoil things. And I really want people to go into this with, you know, not necessarily knowing all the twists and turns.
Yeah, no, without going into spoilers, I wonder if we can do like a spoiler review later, because that I think that there's.
Oh yeah, we'll bring you back in like January or something after the holiday.
We'll figure something out once people have time to watch it. I suppose my biggest final thought is watch it.
Yeah,
like it's really, really good. It's got a lot of heart. It's beautifully told. This is the kind of filmmaking that we should be supporting, because it's the kind of filmmaking where the filmmaker comes in with something to say. It's said beautifully, and there is so much artistry that goes into this. And it, I hate to sound like old and crotchety, but like there's something about this that brings us back to what cinema is supposed to be. It offers so much that I want this thing to do ridiculously well, because I want him to make more things like this with different stories. We didn't have to go to Pinocchio 2, but like,
oh God, I hope there's not a Pinocchio 2.
God, jeez, no, please don't. Like, at the Q&A, one of the things he talked about is he's currently in development on doing another stop motion film with a IP he could not name. Whatever it is, I want it to happen. So for the love of God.
I said there in the moment, I'm saying it again, please be the Graveyard Book. I think I mentioned this in our pod about Henry Selick and him not trying to do it, but it ending up in development hell and being stuck in there ever since. Oh my God, is that a match made in heaven? I'm obsessed with that book.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman and Guillermo del Toro together on a stop motion project, I think, again, has the same energy as Guillermo del Toro's stop motion Pinocchio. It just makes sense. Please let this be the thing that it is. I hope it is.
These words are supposed to be in a sentence together. For the love of God, please make another stop motion film. Like, I want this thing to do ridiculously well. I want it to become a new Christmas movie. Like, mm-hmm. I've said before, I know I've said to you before, Scarlett, I don't know if whoever said it to the podcast listeners, I hate Christmas movies.
You're kind of a Grinch in general, yeah.
I'm a little bit of a Grinch. My favorite Christmas movie is Nightmare Before Christmas. And you can find
a valid choice. Still a valid choice.
Well, I like it because it's not overly saccharine, but that is a discussion for another time. This might be my new Christmas film. Like, it's not a Christmas movie in the traditional sense, but it carries the heart that, like, people, I feel like people look for in a Christmas film, but does it in a way that I don't want to, like, gouge my eyes out. So whatever it is, whatever platform I have here, for the love of God, please go watch this movie. Like, it's a beautifully made film. I want this to do ridiculously well. Guillermo del Toro is another one where if I find out he's got some skeletons in his closet, I'm going to be so incredibly upset.
I'm so sad.
Like, after seeing him in Q&A, I want him to succeed in everything he does. I want the best for him. Please, I just love him.
He's just a pure guy. Like, at this Q&A, he got, like, waved off, basically, because he just sort of kept talking and, like, it was time for, like, them to, like, use the theater for something else. And he was just like, well, I'll see you guys in the lobby. We'll keep talking in the lobby. And, like, predictably, the theater was not super pleased by that and kept trying to usher people out of the lobby because they don't want, like, a bunch of people crowding in front of the doors for, like, fire safety reasons. But, like, he's just a pure guy who wanted to talk to his fans. Like, what a good boy. Yeah, I really hope he doesn't have anything problematic. I'll be sad.
I'm gonna be so sad. Like, he just, you can tell he loves filmmaking. He loves what he does. I want him to continue making these beautifully, beautifully made films. And after Nightmare Alley didn't do awesome, I don't necessarily think his career is in danger, but I think the guy could use a win. And please, let's make this his win.
Is he still on the Haunted Mansion movie? I know that's another one that's been, like, in and out of development hell for, like, 20 years, but I hope that eventually surfaces.
Oh, well, Disney's got a Haunted Mansion movie coming out, like, next year.
I don't know if he's still attached to that. I don't think
he's attached.
Yeah, I know there was a chunk of time where that was going to happen, but yeah, no, it looks like that's not happening. Yeah, I think they bumped him off that. Okay, that's sad. That's really
directed by a guy named Justin Simien.
Yeah, no, there was a period of time where this was going to be Del Toro's movie, or he was attached to a different one. In 2010 he was announced to be running it, but I think this movie went through so many stages that so I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say it's not going to be as good as if Del Toro had done it. It might not be bad. I'm sure it'll be just fine. I trust Del Toro with basically any movie at this point. He's earned my trust in doing basically anything.
Oh, it looks like the guy who is doing it, he did Dear White People.
That's a choice. Okay. I liked that movie, but I wouldn't exactly say, yep, that's the jump to Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, you know what? If he thinks he can do it, I'm willing to hear him out.
I mean, just me, like, even, like, singing, like, stop motion Haunted Mansion, because Haunted Mansion is one of those rides where, like, the detail work is what you're looking at. Like every time you ride Haunted Mansion, you notice something else. That's kind of the point of it, is you see something, another shape in the wallpaper, you see another random artifact in the attic that gives you chills. Like that strikes me as another perfect, like for a man who loves production design, like clearly his favorite part of this process is the production design. Like that's the perfect vehicle for him.
It strikes me as being like a Beau Welch kind of production design.
I could see
I don't necessarily want Burton to direct it, but I would love Beau Welch to prod design.
See, yeah, because like Tim Burton is a guy who has lost my trust. Like I really admire his early films, but unfortunately, so many of his recent ones have just sort of fallen flat. So I've sort of lost my ability to say anything this man touches is gold. Guillermo del Toro with this movie. I almost hope he doesn't go back to live action. Like, it's that good. I love Guillermo del Toro's live action movies. Don't get me wrong. I think he has a new one coming out that he was mentioning. So I know he will do more live action, but like his contributions now to the animation space are such that like I want him to focus his efforts here, because after seeing what he did with Pinocchio, I am so excited to see what he can do next with this. I'm really, really, this, yeah, like, I think just to echo Rachel, this is a really good movie. Everyone, I think, should see it. I think there is, you know, I think a very young child might be scared. I think a young child might be a little bored at some parts. But I'd say anyone 10 and up, I think, can really enjoy this and really appreciate it. You know, I think it's a Christmas movie in the best sense, that I think the whole family can gather around the TV and watch this. In a perfect world, you'd go out to the movie theater to see this, but I'm pretty sure if it has a theatrical release, it's gonna be very limited. So you're probably sort of stuck watching on Netflix.
And like, if you're an adult, like one of the things that Del Toro also talked about in his Q&A is like how animation's not just for kids. Animation is for adults as well. If you're an adult, do not be scared off. I mean, the listeners of this podcast, I'm pretty sure, are not going to be scared off as adults watching an anime.
Oh, no, definitely not as adults.
No, so I'm probably preaching to the choir here. But, like, if you're an adult, do not be scared off from watching, number one, an animated film in general. Number two, this animated film. Like, don't think it's animated, so it's just Cocomelon for kids. Like, it is absolutely something me as a grown adult who like actively has a stake in the film industry watched and appreciated the ever living hell out of.
Yeah, it is wonderful. It is. There's almost no more to say to it. It's just, yep, this is what stop motion, this is what animation, this is what film is supposed to be. Like this, when you watch this, you think, yep, this is it. This is what I wanted out of this movie, and even more, and in surprising you in many other ways beyond what you thought you were going to get. So,
and lived up to every I walked in with pretty high expectations, and it lived up to every one of them.
Absolutely, which is why I don't feel like we're overhyping this in any way. I think no matter what your expectations are going in, I think it's fair to say they'll be exceeded.
Yeah, I believe it completely. So yeah.
Yeah,
after hour-long praise fest.
Hour-long praise fest. I can't find anything negative to say, really. I mean, I guess if I really sat down and thought about it, I could say something. But really, anything I would say would be either a nitpick or really just a subjective matter of personal taste. So it would almost not be relevant. So, well, thank you, Rachel, so much for coming here and for talking with me and letting us share our thoughts on this upcoming film.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, I've had quite a bit of time to sit and stew on my thoughts for this movie, and I want to tell everyone I can that it's so good. So it was definitely a pleasure coming back.
Yeah, no, you're always welcome, as always. You do great things for our ratings when you show up, so you must be doing something right.
Apparently.
But yeah, we'll hopefully have Katie back next week, and we'll start getting into some more of our holiday content. So stick around for that. In the meantime, we're going to pop back in our cartoon time machine. I'll drop Rachel off at whatever destination she wants to go to. We are your animates. We will see you next time.